This is VOA News, reporting via remote. I'm Jeff Custer. Reports from Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in the city of Enerodar indicate the plant has suffered extensive damage after days of shelling over the past week. The plant's operator, Enerodar, says that the plant may already be leaking radiation. On Monday, 42 nations from around the world, including the United Nations and the International Atomic Energy Agency, signed a statement urging Russia to withdraw its armed forces from the area surrounding the plant and allow international inspectors to come assess the damage. Reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv told VOA's Flashpoint program Monday that statement so far has had little to no effect.
Unfortunately, for the moment, we don't have any official information that any international experts from International Atomic Energy Agency had access. We don't even have any official confirmations that the negotiations are going on. So we hear from Ukrainian officials that they call on this action and they request International Atomic Energy Agency to actually enter the plant. What the latest information that we have that Russian side is supposed to give to provide access, because for the moment the plant is still under Russian control. But for the moment, we don't have any confirmations of either the negotiations are on or any particular actions, and advances in this area.
The Reuters news agency reports President Vladimir Putin Monday said Moscow was ready to sell advanced weapons to allies globally and cooperate in developing military technology nearly 6 months into the Ukraine war, in which his army has performed worse than expected. This is VOA News. Kenya's elections chief has named Deputy President William Ruto the winner of a tight presidential election, but four other election officials have disowned that result, casting doubt and confusion over the outcome. The chairman of Kenya's Independent Elections and Boundaries Commission, Wafula Chebukata, said Monday that Ruto won a first-round victory with 50.49% of the vote, about 1.5 percentage points ahead of former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. But minutes before the commission chair announced that result, the Electoral Commission vice chair, Juliana Sharia, said she and three other commissioners were not able to take ownership of that result. The commissioners said the vote counting process was too opaque without providing details. The Associated Press reports that a spokesman for Ruto's main opponent, Raila Odinga, rejected the Electoral Commission chair's announcement of Ruto as the winner. Throughout the verification process that began last Wednesday, there have been accusations of vote rigging and of electoral officials tampering with the results, especially from Odinga's camp against Ruto. The agent for author Salman Rushdie says he is on the road to recovery after being attacked before a speaking engagement Sunday. Associated Press correspondent Julie Walker reports this news comes as Iran denies involvement in the attack on Rushdie, but at the same time justifies it.
Ali Mutah, a New Jersey man whose parents emigrated from Lebanon, pleaded not guilty to attempted murder. The DA alluded to a decades-old Rushdie's killing over his book, The Satanic Verses, as a potential motive. Henry Reese, the co-founder of Pittsburgh City of Asylum, who was on stage with Rushdie Friday when he was attacked, says they were about to discuss writer's safety.
It's an attack against his body, his life, and against every value that he stood for.
Rushdie's son Zafar says, though his life-changing injuries are severe, his usual feisty and defiant sense of humor remains intact. I'm Julie Walker.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said Monday he tested positive for COVID-19 for the second time this year and is experiencing mild symptoms. The Pentagon chief said in a statement that he will continue to work a normal schedule, but will do so virtually from home. Austin said he would get quarantined for the next 5 days in accordance with CDC guidelines and did not surrender any of his authorities. In January, the 69-year-old Austin also contracted COVID-19. In his statement Monday, he said, "Now, as in January, my doctor told me that my fully vaccinated status, including two booster shots, is why my symptoms are less severe than otherwise they would be." Austin said he would continue to consult closely with his doctor in the coming days. Repeating the hour's top story, reports from Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear power plant indicate the plant has suffered extensive damage after days of shelling over the past week. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Custer. This is VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Ihayes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
it is going to possibly prompt Raila Odinga's group perhaps to go to court.
That's attorney James Muamu, a political analyst and former president of the Law Society of Kenya, speaking about the prospects for a challenge to Kenya's presidential election results. Details coming up. Also, officials in central Somalia say a U.S. airstrike against Al-Shabaab militants has killed 14 fighters. We'll have these stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story, we go straight to Nairobi, where VOA TV 54 managing editor Vincent Makori is standing by. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Vincent.
Thank you, yes.
Democracy at work in Kenya, indeed a historical and significant day. The chairman of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, Chairman Chebukati, has made the announcement. William Ruto is Kenya's president-elect. Let's start with that, Vincent.
Well, that finally happened. It had been a very long-awaited announcement for days now. Kenyans were on edge, were really, literally on pins, waiting for that announcement. They were growing increasingly anxious and impatient. But finally today, after many hours of waiting, the announcement was finally made. But it didn't come without drama. There's so much happened just before that announcement was made, because the other side, that is the Azimio coalition that is led by Mr. Raila Odinga, disputed that result and boycotted the whole process. And so after many, many hours of waiting and the nation being kept in suspense, the Electoral Commission chairman went ahead and pronounced Mr. William Samoei Ruto as the president-elect.
And Vincent, everybody was thinking it was Odinga, but how did Ruto manage to have this kind of a very decisive win, and what's the percentage of the win?
Well, you see, he has 52... he has over 50%, 52 point something percent. I'm sorry, not getting the number right now. But Raila has like 48 point something percent. He beat him. You know, it's close, but it was significant in that he got an outright figure, which is required for you to become the president of Kenya. But you can, again, The Raila camp insists that they won this election. In fact, for days they've been insisting that they had tabulated the totals that were submitted to the Electoral Commission from their portal, and it indicated clearly that Mr. Odinga was way ahead. Now, we don't know how they did that. And on the other side, of course, Mr. William Ruto claims he won comfortably, by gathering up to 7 million votes against Raila's 6-point-something million. Now, what is significant also is that four of the commissioners of the Electoral Commission also stormed out of the tallying center and called for a press conference and said they cannot really be party to this, because they believe there was something a little sinister about the tallying at the end of this process. So it is not clear. Whether there is something untoward that happened, and if this goes to court, if perhaps the court will at some point come up with some revelation here. We don't know. But anyway, at any rate, it was billed to be a very close race. It was pretty close. But if you go by what has been announced, Mr. Ruto got a comfortable victory here.
You are there, Vincent, and how is the mood of the country right now, the security? Because we were all on edge, and this thing has been finalized. What's the mood right now, overall?
Well, at the moment, if you talk about those who are supporters of Mr. William Ruto, they are jubilating. They are celebrating. I don't think any of them is going to sleep tonight. But on the other side, Mr. Raila's supporters are very, very sad this night. It is a very somber moment. And, of course, they're waiting to hear what their leader is going to say, what is the direction they take. But, of course, they have indicated they are going to court. They will definitely petition this. We haven't so far, we haven't seen any significant, like, street protests. I went through the city of Nairobi and the environs. Was empty. There was no soul on the street. There were no vehicles. So it looks like everybody decided to go to their homes and wait for the results. And perhaps the reaction is of shock for some of Raila's supporters. And so the tomorrow, I think, will give us a little bit more clarity as to how the people across the country react to this this particular pronouncement, this declaration of Mr. William Ruto as the president and Mr. Raila Odinga as the person who lost this election.
Yes, things are very fluid. We will definitely talk to you tomorrow, Vincent. VOA TV 54 Managing Editor Vincent McCorry, thank you for your input.
It's been a pleasure.
So, as Vincent just said, Kenya's election, hotly contested, and the results could be disputed. VOA's Peter Cloete spoke a short time ago with attorney James Muamu, a political analyst and former president of the Law Society of Kenya, about what may come next.
First, I must say that it appears that the polls were wrong. There must have been something that they did not detect. And I remember the election between George W. Bush and John Kerry, where the pollster did not pick the religious group. I think that's what they may have not internally picked, a certain group that was supporting William Ruto. And the chairman of the commission, Wafula Chebukati, has done what is expected by the law to do. But there has been a dent on this announcement because four of his commissioners have walked out and said that they were not happy with the manner in which he conducted those the last part of the nominations. And I think that is going to possibly prompt Raila Odinga's group perhaps to go to court. The message that we're impressing on Kenyans is that they need to have peace. They need to... keep calm and let this move on. Those who are dissatisfied should have a chance at the Supreme Court.
Leading up to the official declaration of the result, there was tension coupled with the four IEBC commissioners who were displeased with what they said, the last part of opaqueness in the tabulation of the result, tallying of the result. Could this have an impact or create or worsen tensions in the country? Because some people are worried that the strongholds of the supporters of former prime minister could create problems. Do you anticipate this happening?
No, I don't see any problem. That happened in 2007, but I do not foresee that happening again. All I foresee is that they will go to court and ventilate their issues there. But the fact that the four commissioners have worked out is indeed going to raise a big issue at the Constitutional Court, because the result is supposed to be a result of the commission. It's not a result of an individual. So the individual is supposed to declare what has been agreed as a result. So when you find four commissioners working out, it therefore means that there's something amiss.
The dispute, some people suggest, among the commissioners, four on one side and three or two on the other side, undermines the supposed integrity and transparency of the outcome of the August 9 presidential election. What is your take?
I think it does. It does undermine, because you see, it's supposed to be the result of the commission. So that therefore means that Chebukati's result has been announced by three commissioners. And the four commissioners have disagreed. That's a huge thing. And I think that that is something that has to, the court will have to look at. But if you look at two umpires are saying, we are not happy with what has happened, and then three other people saying, oh, as we are all right, there's definitely something that is not right.
So where do Kenyans go from here?
Yeah, no. From here, I think the Kenyans will just go to court. I don't think that people will go to the street because there's already avenues provided by the law if you want to challenge an election petition.
That was attorney James Muamu, a political analyst and former president of the Law Society of Kenya. He was speaking with my colleague Peter Cloutier about the prospects for a challenge to Kenya's presidential election results. Officials in Cameroon are urging people to eat local foods instead of imports following protests over shortages and price spikes caused in part by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. President Paul Biya last week ordered ministers to explain to the public that Russia's Black Sea blockade, not local taxes, has caused a nearly 60% increase in prices for fertilizers and imported foods. Mokedwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Hundreds of civilians, a majority of them women, listened to government officials at the Mfundi market in the capital Yaoundé. Haruna Nyanji Mbutu, the top official in Yaoundé's first district, asked the audience to consume locally grown food, which he says is cheaper than imported food. Asta Kumam, a 30-year-old medical laboratory technician, is among those listening.
Le prix de l'huile a commencé à monter comme des amusements.
Asta says the price of a liter of imported vegetable oil has increased from less than $2 to about $3.50. She says she and her children have decided to measure vegetable oil in a spoon, no matter the quantity of food they are cooking, because they cannot cope with food price hikes. Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji outlines the scope of the problem.
Le sac d'engrais qui coûtait 40 ou 50 000, dès que ça passe à 70 000.
Nji says a 50 kilogram bag of imported rice that sold at $25 in February now sells at $55. Nji says the same quantity of rice grown in Cameroon has witnessed a 5% price increase to $25 because the price of fertilizer imported from Ukraine and Russia has also increased from $30 to more than $70. Cameroon's Trade Ministry reports that the Central African state imported more than 850,000 tons of cereals from Russia and Ukraine in 2020. In contrast, the Cameroon Importers Union says less than 45,000 tons have been imported since January of this year. Last week, five government officials, including the ministers of agriculture, trade, finance, and mines, held a press conference to explain the consequences of Russia's war in Ukraine. The press conference, ordered by President Biya, was to help quell protests against price hikes in several towns and villages across Cameroon. René Emmanuel Sadi is the Cameroon government's spokesperson.
Le gouvernement a garanti de manière appréciable la disponibilité des produits.
Sadi says Cameroon has provisionally suspended the export of cereal crops, palm oil and other staple foods to neighboring countries to make sure that there is enough food in the Central African state. He says the government has removed or suspended import duties and taxes on rice, fish, palm oil, and building material to spare consumers from skyrocketing prices. Julien Grégoire Ongene Ateba is an economist and international transport and logistics specialist at Cameroon's seaport in Douala. He says the current situation could have been avoided with more foresight.
Bien avant la crise de la COVID-19, le taux d'inflation du Cameroun aussi.
He says if Cameroon government invested in local production, especially of food, as economists suggested, to cushion the effects of COVID-19, civilians should have been spared the price spikes and food scarcity that has resulted from Russia's war in Ukraine. In July, Cameroon's government called for emergency food support for more than 2 million people facing hunger. Authorities said poor civilians threatened by food insecurity along the northern borders with Chad and Nigeria are finding it hard to cope with the rising prices. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
In Egypt today, Coptic Christians mourned the death of 41 people, including at least 15 children, killed in a church fire Sunday. The blaze broke out at Martha Abu Sifin Church in the working-class district of Imbaba, outside Cairo. Weeping mourners attended services as two nearby churches to honor the victims, including Bishop Father Abdel Masabak Keat. Some observers say the fire was started by a short circuit in a power generator, but the Interior Ministry says it broke out in an air conditioning unit on the second floor. Many of the victims and rescuers were overcome by smoke and heat, and the public prosecutor says asphyxiation was the cause of death. Others jumped out of windows of the four-story building. Some witnesses told Al Jazeera that the authorities were slow to respond, but the government says help came within minutes. President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi and the Grand Imam of Cairo, Pearl's Mosque in University, offered their condolences to Coptic Christian Pope Tawadros II. El-Sisi also asked the Armed Forces Engineering Authority to oversee the reconstruction of the church. Egypt's Coptics make up about 10% of the country's population. The last French armed forces in Mali have relocated to Niger after a falling out with Mali's military government and its alleged use of Russian mercenaries. Annie Reisenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
French forces have officially left Malian territory, according to a French Armed Forces Ministry press release. The last military unit of the Barkhane force present on Malian territory crossed the border between Mali and Niger at 11 a.m. local time Monday, the release says. The French army initially intervened in Mali in 2013 in Operation Serval, after northern Mali was taken over by Islamist militant groups in 2012. Operation Serval was replaced by the anti-insurgent Operation Barkhane in 2014. Operation Barkhane will now be based in Niger. Though then-French President François Hollande received a warm welcome in newly liberated Timbuktu on arrival in 2013, the Malian public has turned sour toward French forces in recent years, with several protests held in cities across Mali calling for the forces' departure. French President Emmanuel Macron announced in February that French forces would withdraw over a period of 4 to 6 months amid increasing tensions between France and Mali's military government and France's accusations that Mali is working with mercenaries from the Wagner Group, a Russian paramilitary company with links to the Kremlin. Human Rights Watch and several international media outlets have reported on alleged extrajudicial killings and abuses committed by Russian mercenaries in Mali. Mali's military government has continually denied the accusations and said it only works with official Russian instructors. Meanwhile, 2022 has been one of the deadliest so far in Mali's decade-long conflict, with both civilians and soldiers targeted by Islamists. 42 Malian soldiers were killed this month during an attack in Tessit, and Mali's main military base in Kati, just 15 kilometers from Bamako, was attacked in July. In June, 132 civilians were murdered by suspected Islamists in an attack in central Mali. Mali also experienced tensions with its West African neighbors this year, with regional bloc ECOWAS imposing sanctions after military rulers proposed a 4-year delay in elections. The sanctions were lifted in July after elections were scheduled for 2024. Senegalese President Macky Sall met with Malian interim President Assimi Goïta Monday morning in Bamako for the first time since the military government took power in a 2020 coup. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
South Sudan authorities released VOA freelance reporter Ding Magot after detaining her for more than a week. plainclothes security operatives arrested Ding a week ago Sunday, shortly after she interviewed a small group of young people who were peacefully protesting in the Konyo-Konyo market. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Journalist Ding Magot was arrested on August 9 at Nyakron shortly after interviewing a young man who took part in a peaceful protest at Konyo-Konyo market over soaring food prices. Police said she did not have press credentials. Magot was detained at the Malakia police station for 3 days before being transferred to Juba Central Prison. Authorities released Magot this afternoon. Ding Magot's sister, Ayen Magot, tells South Sudan in Focus her sister's detention mentally tortured the entire family. Magot says she is relieved her sister was finally released and thanked the authorities who worked to secure her freedom.
We want to thank God because I have seen Ding and she's happy that she's released. So this is all thanks to everyone who was involved in trying to get her out and all thanks to God for allowing her to come out unharmed and she's free at last.
Patrick Oyet, chairperson of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan, welcomed Magot's release, noting it is easy to get sent to jail but complicated to get out. Oyet is calling on authorities to ensure that legal systems are made easier to prevent situations where people charged with simple offenses are released quickly, while advising journalists to be careful, especially when covering protests. Oyet says Magot's detention should not deter other journalists from covering events of public interest.
It shouldn't scare anybody. It is unfortunate. But also one thing which is positive is that the law is there. And another thing is that we have seen a lot of support. We've received a lot of support from other media organizations. We've got a lot of support from even political leaders. We have got a lot of support from the Bar Association, from the various law firms. There are people who are together when it comes to the issue of freedom of expression, the work of journalists.
Oyet says Magot may need psychosocial support after spending several days in detention.
From the few questions we've asked, from the little interaction we've had with her, we know that mentally she is disturbed. She needs some help because she has gone through some experiences that in her life she had never gone through. So definitely she will need some counseling and some form of help, some rest, a bit, and then she could resume her work.
Oyet says Magot's detention was not the first of its kind and urges South Sudan authorities to widen the media space so that journalists can freely report on development, including the revitalized peace agreement and upcoming elections. Eliaja Alerque, managing director of the South Sudan Media Authority, says the authority cannot comment on Magot's case at this time.
The police say they cannot be able to release because it has already been taken to prison. And we have to follow with the Ministry of Justice to release the journalist, and then we will be able to handle the case instead being treated as a protester. We are able to issue the statement now, but we have already confirmed with the Voice of America that she was assigned to do the covering. And then the rest of the question will be handled by the media authority.
Magot's defense lawyer, David Ayuel, confirms Magot and the six protesters arrested on Sunday were all released on bail today. Asked whether authorities charge Magot with an offense, Ayuel declined to comment.
And for that now, I may not be able to answer now, but I'll be able to maybe some other time. All we know is that they've been granted bail. And if there is any other proceedings that will happen, they will be informed.
Ayuel urges authorities to respect the rights of citizens as stipulated in the transitional constitution and calls on young people to practice their rights in a legal way whereby their safety is a priority. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhid in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.